Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
What about the state of America? What do you think that's going on in the New York question?
I can't decide whether to try and be a citizen of the world or to identify with a particular country. But I guess you really have no choice. Whatever happens, that America is the arena right now. It's the center of action. And it will take strong, fluid people to survive in a climate like ours, but I'm sure people will do it.
Number to call to opine, share, or just whine at the world. 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. Ah, oh, I don't believe these Mets. They've got to get away from the Marlins. It is an allergy. Ugly just did it to them again. Oh, I can't even look. 3-0 lead, and it's 3-2 already. Hate them. I hate this Marlins. Look at the same garbage as last night. Serves it in the center. Ooh. Oh, they're hateable. The Marlins are hateable. The day that the Marlins are eliminated from the National League East in the playoffs, I will do a special show celebrating the death of the Marlins. Don't like them. Don't like them at all. Don't like them in a box. Don't like them. Oh, just give him a little Batman here.
You filthy criminals.
They've stolen about 6 games from us. I can't stand it anymore. Anyway, welcome to the program. I like saying it that way. Program. My Craig Carton imitation, I guess. Program. Tonight, we're going to be taking a look under the American flag to see what's waving around. Because it is the halfway point of 2010. Logged in another 24, 25 shows here on the old tin can. And I just figured, with 4th of July and everything, we've done some 4th of July shows, actually. in the 3 years we've been doing this thing. Wednesdays have been, you know, for some reason, strange attractors for lots of holidays. And you know, when I look around at the state of the union and all the things that are going on, I just don't see it anymore. I think we're at a point now where between all the social media, you think about all the guests we've had on this year that dealt with social media, that dealt with the influence of it and how it's made us much more aware of the world and how the world relates to us, not our country, not our town, not our neighbors, but the world, and how it influences the way we behave. We've had a social intelligence boy there. What's his name? Eric Wallman was on a couple times talking about that. We've had some PR people on talking about how the media's influenced our behavior. We touched on a lot of these topics over the last 6 months as we've seen the world go by and really fundamentally shift. When you think about the world around New Year's Eve, you know, New Year's Day around there, where were we then and where we are now in terms of the way that we look at the platforms that we communicate through? Vastly different. I mean, even though it's a blip on the, you know, on the calendar, it's a blip. 6 months is a blip. Look how much has structurally changed. The healthcare debate, the teabaggers, all of these things, the midterm elections, all these things that have been sort of, you know, percolating along, are now starting to crest. And that was before we had the BP crisis. It was before we had, you know, the Arizona border thing happening. You know, that was before we had the Russian spies. that was almost like a cartoon the other day. That was before we had the guy in Times Square, you know, fake blowing up the car. I mean, there's just been so many things that have happened. And then, of course, we had last week, we had the passing of the generals. As McChrystal had a hand in his stars and stripes there, and go take his place with the choir and let General Petraeus resume control. So I'm just looking around. I'm like, you know, what do we got? What do we got? We got four South American countries in the World Cup semifinals starting, I think, on Friday. All right, America's out, of course. I'm just now getting over it. I think Landon, what's his name, is going to be on Daily Show tonight, actually, too. But we got other things on the forefront looking forward. I mean, for example, tonight at midnight, well, first of all, just for old time's sake, whoever wins the World Cup, this goes out to you guys, okay? Ground ball rolls about 92 feet at third base. Four hits in the inning. Thank you, Pelfrey. Mr. Ace. Three-run lead is now a one-run lead. I hate the Marlins. Anyway, as I was saying, tonight's a different flavor, because tonight at midnight, it's sort of Christmas for the NBA as the free agent signings begin. So I figured I'd just, you know, put out a signal in case some ears were to the BTR, and they were looking at the summertime tonight. I just want to introduce you, LeBron.
We are the New York Knicks. We are the New York Knicks. We are the New York Knicks.
That's right. And what do the Knicks do? Let's see if I can dial that up for us here. Keep the switchboard doing its thing tonight, so just bear with me here if I start messing up. That is too damn loud. I gotta tone that down. Let's try that at 50. Anyway, we're going to get to all of that and more with our guest at the bottom of the hour, Paul Gersio from the Merlin Project, who has a way to see into the future and see what's coming down the pike here the second half of 2010. And if you have any comments, if you have anything you want me to ask him, I'll open the chat room now early at 9:10 on a Wednesday night. And, you know, we got lots of things to find out. What's going to happen on unemployment? Well, are we ever going to come out of the recession? What's going to happen with the dollar internationally, with the markets? They're a little squirrely these days. Who's getting Cliff Lee? You know, I got my priorities here. When you got a futurist, they're asking questions you want answers to. And what about your future? Huh? You're sitting here listening to my dopey show. Are you able to see your own future? Do you know that it's off to the right in space? Do you know that? Do you know how to get there? Maybe I'll teach you that later. I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing here tonight. We are reviewing and we are previewing is what we're doing. There's a pivot show. They call it a pivot show in the business. Well, a lot of fallout the last couple of weeks, you know. Irving Dardick on last week, raising a little bit of a question in the minds of the listeners about maybe the authority that's gone there in healthcare. We're going to be shifting gears, talking a little more healthcare 2.0 as we get into the second half of this year. In the early stages of organizing something called the Coherence Conference. I will spit that out here now. See where it comes back to haunt me later for early October. So we'll get some news out about that. In case you don't know what I do and where I am and how I do it and all that, somaspace.org if you're new to the show, somaspace.org. O-R-G. So, you know, I guess kind of to lead off tonight, just to kind of get me into the flavor, and because I'm absolutely lazy, I figured I'd attack, you know, a sitting duck here, which is this, you know, the movement that I often beat up on. And we beat up on it a little bit a couple weeks ago. Talking about, you know, positive slappy crowd. Hey, Matt's got a leadoff double here. I think so, anyway. Rounding first, and he is out. Oh, wait, he's safe. Wow. Let's check that out. How the heck did he beat that tag? Cora's a magician, ladies and gentlemen. Well, dunks in the left field. This little weasel Marlin backhands it and makes a strong throw. The ball beats him by 5 feet. He crawls on his hands and knees, and he gets around Ugla, short-armed Ugla. He absolutely got around the tag. Lead-off double. That is beautiful. Let's see if we can score him here. Anyway, one of the things I beat up on a lot is the notion of the secret and all that stuff. And I don't know how many shows I spent first half of this year talking about that and how to basically try to rip that out of the minds of the people that spend $8 billion a year on self-help and end up spending another $8 billion the following year. You didn't get any help. Didn't get any help at all. And, of course, Pelfrey can't bunt him over to third. So, there's a karma there. Anyway, these folks at this RSA thing, if you haven't seen RSA Anime on YouTube, they've got almost 250 videos up here that are just unbelievable. And I found one here. It's called Smile or Die. It's about 10 minutes long. I figure I'll chew up some time here getting ready for Paul and entertain the troops here since I hardly have a voice this week from my World Cup-itis and my LeBronchitis, you know. So take a listen to this, and I'm going to try and weave this into the conversation a little bit with Paul in a couple of minutes because I think a lot of the stuff that has to do with the future has to do with attitude and orientation. And take a listen to this, see what you think.
Being sent to support groups or networking groups, there are all kinds of names for these things, where the message was, hey, it's not bad to be laid off. It's actually a good thing. It's actually an opportunity. It's a growth opportunity, and you will come out of it much better. And if you want to come out of it at all, of course, you better work on your attitude, because the key to getting a job in today's corporate world is not knowing things or having skills or experience, but having a positive attitude. Somebody who's in an absolute low point in their lives, and certainly losing a job can be that, and just tell them, there's nothing wrong. You know, just put on a smiley face and get on with it. And don't complain, whatever you do. So then I began to see a pattern and find it in more and more aspects of American life, this kind of mandatory optimism and cheerfulness. One area where it is very strongly concentrated now and has been for some years is the corporate world, the workplace, where the idea has been, yes, indeed, you better be positive because you're not really there to do X or Y tasks. You're there to spread good cheer and make the other people around you comfortable and happy all day. Now, you might think, what's wrong with that? I mean, certainly many people have asked me, well, all right, so it's delusional to think everything is okay, or to go to the real delusional extreme. You know, embedded in all this is the idea that you change the physical world with your thoughts. When you send thoughts out from your mind, they exert a force that brings things to you that you want. So if we're doing this right, we could all concentrate on getting $1 million or whatever, and indeed it would come. And there have been a lot of attempts to explain this scientifically. For a while it was magnetism, that thoughts must exert a magnetic force that draws things to you. As we know, however, our heads are not attracted to refrigerators. The magnetic force is so tiny that is exerted by that. Now they talk about quantum physics. I love that. You know, quantum physics, for some reason, have become an excuse to mock all of science. See, nothing real, nothing true. And whatever you think, that's how the world is. So if you think positively, you remake the world positively according to this pseudoscientific explanation. But anyway, what's wrong with this? Why not delude yourself into thinking, you know, everything's fine and that you can change the world with your thoughts? And I have two problems with it. One, I'll be hardline about this. I think delusion is always a mistake. There's no safe delusions. Although one of the messages of positive psychology in the United States is, yeah, it's good to have some positive delusions about yourself. I think the biggest evidence for that is the financial meltdown of 07. Now, a lot of things went into that, you know, like extreme class inequalities of the United States and, well, your country, too. Greed and economies based increasingly on finance rather than manufacturing or anything. But certainly one element was the grip of positive thinking in the corporate world and particularly in the financial sector. I mean, people who tried to raise problems in the middle of the last decade would be shut up or fired. You couldn't be inside Countrywide Mortgage Company, which was the one that it's almost single-handedly set off the whole collapse in the U.S., and say, I'm worried about our subprime mortgage exposure, or you'd be out. And I got to interview some Wall Street guys, very successful Wall Street guys. They said, this is just how it is. You can't, you know, people who tried, let's say within Lehman Brothers, to point out that the housing crisis could not rise forever, were fired. And so it was this willful ignorance. Nobody could think bad thoughts, nothing bad, and if you didn't, nothing bad would happen. And I think the other thing that I find very, very disturbing about it is I just think it's cruel. I mean, it's cruel to take people who are having great difficulties in their lives and tell them it's all in their head and they only have to change their attitude. And, my favorite example of this moral callousness is from the author of The Secret. That was a bestseller here, too, admit it. The book on how you can have anything you want, attract anything to yourself by thinking. And she was asked about the tsunami of 06 and how, you know, how could this happen? You know, and she said, and kind of paraphrasing it, those people, the victims of it, must have been sending out tsunami-like vibrations into the universe to attract that to themselves, because nothing happens to us that we don't attract. And I think that's beyond amorality. I don't even know where to locate that. I'm not advocating gloom and pessimism or negativity or depression, those can also be delusional. I mean, you can go around, you know, making up a story to yourself that everything you undertake is going to fail. And there's no reason to think that. And my very radical suggestion is realism, just trying to figure out what is actually happening in the world and seeing what we can do about those parts of it that are threatening or hurtful. My background is in science, and I think, you know, there's not one fixed truth or reality, but we close in on something. And we think, oh, this is as good as we can understand for now, you know, until we get better information, but try to act on that. I think I would make a case that we are hardwired to be vigilant. I mean, yes, we have many other capabilities, you know, to be jolly, to be experience camaraderie, solidarity, all of those great things, but we're hardwired to be vigilant and on guard. That's how our very distant ancestors survived, not by saying, oh, everything's probably okay, don't worry about the motion in the tall grass over there. The people who survived said, move, it's a leopard.
All right, folks, I don't know what happened there, but hopefully you didn't miss too much. Picking up where she left off.
Questions about that war within the hearing of the president. Well, as it did, like the general suggested, that we were only putting half as many troops on the ground as would be needed to accomplish whatever we were trying to accomplish, he was pushed out of the way. He lost his job, essentially. What could be cleverer as a way of quelling dissent than to tell people who are in some kind of trouble, poverty, unemployment, et cetera, that it's all their attitude, you know, that's all that has to change, that they should just get with the program, you know, smile and get no complaining. You know, I mean, it's a brilliant form of social control, which, by the way, was practiced in the Soviet Union. I mean, one of the principles of Soviet communism was optimism. So it's a form of social control, by the way, that, you know, is quite widespread, has been widespread in totalitarian types of societies, but I think it has worked very well in America. Take the issue of class inequality. How could that be a problem if anybody can become rich by thinking about it? You know, if any one of us can just attract wealth to ourselves, there's no issue. Somebody raised a parallel to what we call market fundamentalism, right? You know, the idea that the market, the invisible hand, will straighten everything out. That you don't have to intervene, you don't have to have policies, you don't have planning, because there's this miraculous force that just irons out everything. Well, maybe a couple of generations get crushed along the way, but it's basically, I think it's completely overlaps with the positive thinking ideology. You don't really have to do anything because there is this benevolent, invisible deity, the market, that will clear everything up. And I tell people, you want to really take a mental leap, a sort of a kind of belief. Believe that we could change things. This is it's the powerlessness of positive thinking, because it always just envisions you as a lone individual changing the world. Or not changing the world, redesigning the world to fit your ideas. But we do have we do have power. We have collective power, which we could use to make changes that would end a great deal of unnecessary suffering in the world.
Wow. Well, I don't know if you caught all that, but that's Barbara Ehrenreich on the darker side of positive thinking. Check it out at rsa.org. Over on the YouTube, just plug in RSA Animate Smile or Die and check that whole thing out. I don't know when the BTR crapped out on us before, but hopefully you heard the whole segment, because it's pretty cool stuff she was trying to say, and I've expressed some of the sentiments over here on the little show we're doing. So anyway, be that as it may, we are minutes away from being joined by Paul Gersio to straighten me out. Hopefully I'll attract a better switchboard in my future on this dopey BTR here. So, again, you guys have anything you want me to ask him or anything that I don't bring up topic-wise, Number to call, 646-478-4847. Take a look at where I was 6 months ago and where I am now on this dopey show. Now, I've been doing this show alone with some guests for what? A little over a year now? Out of the 3 years we've been on the air? Show's kind of had three incarnations. Started off as Naked Soma in the spring of 07, right? And we had three hosts back then. And we yammered away about a lot of pop culture stuff. But basically, it was just three people talking. Did a lot of stuff. Got into some of the things that we were doing on the ground here in Larchmont, USA, fall of 07, when one of our hosts, his wife had a twins and he couldn't do the show anymore. So then the second year, me and Professor Val hosted the show, and we had still had guests on and stuff, but it really started to get a little weird because the show oscillated without having that third person balancing us. We sort of went between the psyche and the soma a lot, and the show kind of taffy-pulled. And then, as fate would have it, Professor Val got a job and couldn't do the show anymore at night. And now just, she's our pagan pal. She joins us periodically, but basically she no longer became available. So there's just me. And I tried a lot of different things, interviewing the authors and the experts and kicking things around, trying to get the cutting-edge ideas out to you guys. And I've really tried to steer it away from my stuff because there's nothing worse than an hour-and-a-half infomercial. Hey, my stuff is good. Go get my stuff. And once in a while, drop in a couple of things. But for the most part, if you want to know about my work, you go to summerspace.org. You want to know what's going on in the world, you come to Summertime. And I try to put it into context because I think the chronic thing that's happening is we're under tremendous, unprecedented social stress. It's everywhere. That's why I harp on the social media, because it doesn't take a break. Do you remember the Buffalo Head when you grow up? The TV stations would sign off. They play the Star Spangled Banner, and you get the beep, and that would be it. Off the air, right? I watch my daughter. I watch her friends. I watch grown, men and women are constantly chatting, constantly texting, constantly interacting with this amorphous blob. It's all about the positive thinking and the deity out there. Forget the market. It's the web. The internet solves all because it's the TMZ world. It's where all the hidden secrets are. It's where all I'm going to make my millions up there. It's the pot of gold up there. And I don't see the internet getting healthier over the last 3 years, as all this media has been sifted and sorted and uploaded up there. I see it getting it just as toxic as it is down here. And I don't know if we're getting anywhere, useful. We've had guests on both sides of that coin, I guess, but for the most part, I look at it as one of the primary reasons why we're so socially stressed and why we're seeking so many outlets. Because we forgot how to be comfortable at the primary level within ourselves. And I just see it here in the office all the time, the lack of quiet in people, the lack of calm, forget calm, just quiet. And the noise has become just like those Vesuvula things at the World Cup, sort of omnipresent. And on cue, joining us now from an undisclosed location on the Eastern Seaboard, as we pop up the old Safe Vine introduction here. Paul Griscoe from the Merlin. Straighten us out. All right. Let's come up here. All right. Whoops. There he goes. Welcome to my cloud.
Whoops.
Yeah,
that's one of those great introductions, Mark.
Yeah, I went to click the thing and the keyboard, the switchboard reset, so I lost everything for a second. Well, welcome back, my friend. We had you on beginning of the year. I figured that we'll punctuate our second quarter exit with getting a glimpse at the third and the fourth with you and your work, because you haven't had an idle 6 months, I'll tell you that.
No, it's been very interesting. The only thing that hasn't happened, I suppose, is some kind of a flip in the administration in terms of the personnel, which maybe is still in the offing. We had it figured for somewhere in this between the spring and maybe election time, and we're only just barely past the spring stage. So I guess that still gives us a little breathing space. But I'll tell you, one of the things that's interesting about what Dr. Hart and I have been doing now for a little over 20 years is the fact that this technology is remarkable in its ability to pinpoint the point at which an ongoing situation is going to shift gears. And, I mean, I suppose if we had been keeping track of the fact that the Exxon Valdez was 21 years ago, and 21 years is one of these larger cycles at work. If we had noticed that, which we hadn't, we might have stuck our neck out and said, "Well, there's going to be a big oil spill, or the equivalent thereof in the spring or summer of 2010." What we saw instead, and what you can actually see yourself if you go to the timetrack.org website, is the time track for this December 22nd, 2012, this end of the Mayan calendar. And one of the things that we noticed when we ran that years ago was the fact that the high point in activity that was going to perhaps precipitate some of the things that people were talking about in this 2012 window was going to happen around the middle of 2010. And so here's the middle of 2010.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And we have this oil spill, which is just, we're getting an Exxon Valdez every 4 days, and the potential long-term damage from this thing is going to be extraordinary. This is going to make Katrina look like a day at the beach, literally. If a hurricane comes through the middle of the Gulf this year, and the predictions are for some really high level of hurricane activity this year, it's actually pretty amazing that the first named storm is actually turning into perhaps a weak Category 2 hurricane. That doesn't augur well for the remainder of the hurricane season if the first storm turned into an actual hurricane. But if it comes plowing through the middle of the Gulf, there's no telling what a mess this could make. All over farmlands in the South, and we'd be seeing people with oil on their windshields, as far north as halfway up the Mason-Dixon line. So not only that, but look at what damage it's doing politically to Obama, in a way that nobody could have possibly imagined.
It seems like he's actually taken on the original stance he took, to it was almost to minimize it, then to go into blame mode, and then to go into poor me mode, helpless old me now. And now it almost seems like he's being almost like a petulant high school principal. Everyone's gonna get detention, And it's almost like the public has almost moved on from it. It's almost like it equates the government with BP and all these backyard things from all the scandals that came up, and then with all the other Chicago politics that went on around it, with the Pennsylvania thing and promising the one guy the job and all that other scandalous stuff that kind of got swept under the rug. I remember kind of when BP happened, right around the time it happened, we had the Times Square thing, that same night at the correspondence dinner. And it just seemed like almost as if, and I don't know if you saw it, a couple weeks ago ESPN had a special about June 14th, 1994, when you had the O.J. slow car chase and you had all these different sporting events happening at the same time. And,
right.
before the internet was around. So we had to do this linearly through, you know, network television. And now
right.
you have 6, 7, 8 different scandals, earthquakes, tsunamis, border things in Arizona, you know, economic stuff going on all at the same time. And meanwhile, he's trying to get the health care bill passed, and he's trying to get the jobs bill passed, and he's trying to deal with immigration reform, and he's got the governor mad at him in Arizona. And it just seems like an internet president, and this is only really the third one we've had, and I would say Bush is someone who completely ignored the internet, ignored everything.
Right.
But it just seems like if you're dealing with the, with these waves of time, as you so eloquently, you know, talked about the last time you were on, is he drowning in sort of a
well,
horizons here?
You know, that's interesting that you should mention it that way, because we really did think. That around a year and a half or so into this Obama presidency, we were going to see some dramatic event that was going to have a very long-term effect on the country and on the administration, and we were thinking along the lines of somebody taking a pop at him or something happening to Biden that would force them to find somebody to fill in for Biden as vice president, and you know the likely somebody would be Hillary Clinton. That would make things real interesting in the 2012 election. But we weren't looking for a natural disaster, and this one actually happened on Earth Day. It's almost as though we're getting laughed at. And you know, who knew, I'm sure you didn't, I didn't, that they were drilling below their ability to send the human down to fix anything that might break. Now, how ludicrous is that in the long run? I mean, yeah, let's drill down below the level where we can fix it if something goes wrong. Okay, I mean, I'm sure that if we had all known that at the time, that the regulations were being sort of winked and nodded at, that there would have been an extraordinary uprising around that idea. And of course, then we would have gone back and we would have brought up the issue of the Exxon Valdez and the fact that there have been a lot of little gushers all along over the years that nobody's really paid a lot of attention to. In fact, this afternoon, one of the experts that was on, the scientist that hosts SciTech on cable, I think his name is Michio Kusu, basically said that hurricanes cause little ruptures in the oil lines in the Gulf anyway. So never mind this gusher that's going on now. He said there are a number of small fissures that have been caused by previous hurricanes. And, you know, you come to find out that there's something close to 4,000 of these rigs out there. Well, I didn't know that. And there's a number of them that are drilling below the level where they can go down and fix it if there's a problem. So, I mean, what kind of craziness is that all about? It's just remarkable that was ever allowed to happen. And the problem is a shared one, because while the regulations were sort of winked and nodded at by the Bush gang and the Cheney people, there was no real change that was made in any of them, or some moratorium placed when the Obama people came in. So they're as much to blame for letting this continue as the last administration was for initiating it. So, you know, who do you point your finger at? And I think that part of the reason that Obama has sort of backed off on this is he doesn't want to interfere with the cleanup so that BP has no excuse for paying for it all. If we go in there with the National Guard and you know, divisions of the Army and whatnot, and start doing some of this, they can always say, well, you know, we didn't make that mess, and they made it because they're not in the oil business and they don't know what they're doing. You know, and then it would have ended up going to litigation. And I understand that litigation from the the Exxon Valdez is either still going on or just barely over after 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't want people in the Gulf whose livelihoods are being jeopardized by this situation to be waiting 20 years to get paid off, you know, not in 2010 dollars even. So that I think part of this is a matter of, well, let's let these scoundrels who screwed it up fix it. Well, the problem is they don't know how to fix it. You know, there's been no experience with this. And the whole idea that we don't have deep diving submersibles that can go down with people in them, okay, to fix this mess is preposterous.
Navy subs don't go a mile deep
no.
in the water?
No. And not only that, the submersibles that do, we don't own any of them. France
right.
does, Japan, the you know, Russia, and I forget who else. We have none of them of our own. So we don't have any that we can send down because we don't own any of them. And we haven't asked anybody to borrow one, and I'm not even sure that those submersibles, the kind, for instance, that Jim Cameron used when they were filming for Titanic and so on, have any capability of doing any kind of remote grappling and whatnot at those kinds of depths. So maybe they can go down and take a look, but they're probably not going to see a whole lot more than the cameras are seeing. But the whole idea of this, of drilling below the point where you can send anybody down to fix it, is completely crazy. And we effectively just found out. I wouldn't be surprised if Obama, within the last, 3 months, 2 months that this has been going on, just found out that, gee, they're drilling down below the point where we have an ability to go and fix it. I don't think that was commonly known by anybody except people in the oil business. So, this is one of those situations that sort of literally bubbled up almost out of nowhere. But the interesting parallel is that in the cyclic stuff that Dr. Hart and I have been playing with now for 20 years, there are essentially four significant cycles, with maybe five, six, there's probably a couple of other smaller ones. But the big ones are about every 7 years, which runs really from 6.5 to 8, so the actual midpoint of that is about 7.25, so approximately 7 years. Then approximately 21 years, which runs from about 19.75 to about 22.25 years, okay? And there's the Exxon Valdez. You go back and you look at that. That was 1989. Okay, that's 21 years ago, almost exactly. Same thing if you went back about 42 years. So now we're talking, 40.75 to about 43.25 or thereabouts. And then the largest one is about roughly 82 years. And so 7 and 21 and 42 and 84, so those being the margins. And then there's a few others. 9 months, for instance, which is the human gestational period, is also one. 28 and a half, roughly, is one of those. But that's about all, those intervals. And when you go back in those intervals, even in your own life, you'd find that things that are going on now in your life are related to stuff that you started or which was an issue 7 years ago. If you're old enough, 21 years ago. If you're older still, 42 years ago. Okay? And if you actually go back those intervals and take a look at the people you were involved in, the circumstances that were going on, the level of activity in terms of change, movement within your family, gains and losses, people arriving, people departing, that kind of thing, large lifestyle changes, big career moves, and so on, you'll find that those increments are very telling. In certain years, for particular individuals, that's the generic information, but if we're dealing with you particularly or me particularly or Barack Obama particularly, the clock for those things didn't start at when you were born at zero date, for instance. It started whenever it started, and it affected you depending upon when you arrived here. So, for instance, the big 21-year interval may have actually shown up in somebody's life the first time when they were five, but then it's going to show up again at 26, and it's going to show up again at 47, and it's going to show up again at 68, age 68. It depends on when it started the first time. The seven-year cycle may have started at seven, but it could just as easily have started at 6 months, and then it's going to be 6 months, and 7 years plus 6 months, and 14 years plus 6 months, and so on, all the way down the lifetime. So depending upon where in your lifetime this set of cycles began to affect you will indicate where those large change points are going to be. But generically, you can take any interval in your life and add those increments to it and watch what happens at the next one. So if something really big happened in 1993, in 2000 or thereabouts, there was a significant change in that. And 93 plus 21, so around, where are we here, 2015 or thereabouts, there's going to be another. And it's going to be related to the stuff that happened in 93 and 94. So one of the things that Dr. Hart and I do with these time tracks is we look to see where along the timeline of an ongoing event is it liable to fork off in another direction than whatever you would have expected it to continue doing. And that's what we see and saw originally with this Obama administration at approximately the 18-month juncture. Now, what's interesting is that when Bill Clinton was in, we saw the same kind of thing at about 18 to 24 months into Clinton's first term, we saw a huge change. Well, you know what happened? It was the Republican Revolution of 1994. Bill Clinton got marginalized. In fact, they were talking seriously about him not even winning a second term. That was Newt Gingrich and the Republicans and the term limits and all of that came
back
in.
America.
That's right.
Back now. Newt's back now.
Exactly.
You're going to run again.
Exactly.
Wow. So when you look at all these things, if you're tracking BP stocks, say, using your methods, you look at a 52-week cycle with BP, you could never see this coming out of, you know.
Well, what you would do, what you'd look at is the incorporation date of the corporation. You'd
okay.
go back and you'd take a look at when, and BP is probably an extension of some earlier company that became BP. I would imagine with most of the oil companies, they were originally something else, and now they've changed names and logos and maybe even the ownership and whatnot, but. I would go back to the incorporation date of the original corporation, and then I would go and I'd look to see at what points along the way that corporation branched off in some way, and I would look at the last major forking off of the corporation, and chances are that's where you would see this. You would see it at the last major fork in the timeline of the corporation itself. I wouldn't look at the stock so much, because obviously stock is going to follow the events, but I would look to see where the last fork in the road was in whatever BP, whatever the, you know, progenitor of BP was, and I'm assuming there was one. I don't think it was always British Petroleum, maybe it was.
I got it here. It was in May of 1901. okay.
They always go back. They always go back forever.
Goes back to the Shah of Iran. First commercially significant find in the Middle East, and it says April 1909, the Anglo-Persian Oil Company was incorporated as the Burma Oil Company, and then that became BP later on. And it looks like
right.
March
well,
1951.
That's where you would take the those dates.
54 was when it became British Petroleum, 54.
Okay. You'd take those dates.
Okay.
And you'd run the most significant of them, and chances are what you'd see, and this is what's so remarkable about this technology, if you took the right ones and you ran the right ones out to where we are right now, you'd see a point where they all sort of converge. So in other words, the timelines of all of those dates would have a convergence point right here. And in the, 09, 010, 011 window, you'd see a convergence point on those timelines. And all that you would know for sure looking at that, if you looked at it in advance, was, boy, something really big is going to happen to this corporation right around 2010. You wouldn't know what it was specifically. But if you then went back and said, well, all right, what happened 7 years ago? What happened 21 years ago? What happened 42 years ago? And one of the things you'd find doing that was the Exxon Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
And then George and I might stick our neck out and say, gee, they might just be a big oil spill.
Hmm.
You know, that's effectively how we do this. Okay, so it's not guessing, and it's not just throwing darts, at the wall. It's a matter of going back intervals of time and looking to see, and what you'd have to have done in that case is have done a series of these time track runs on the initial starting dates of things like British Petroleum. We hadn't done that, so we did no I don't even know if we ran the Exxon Valdez because the technology that we're using started the same year that the Exxon Valdez spill happened in '89. So I'm not sure at the point so in other words, the Exxon Valdez happened, I think, either just before or just after, but somewhere right in there, the time frame in which this thing got off the ground. So I doubt seriously that that's something we would have run at that point, because in 89, the big thing that was really going on was not the oil spill so much, it was the fall of the Soviet Union.
I was going to say, we had another bigger fish to fry back then.
That's right.
Was almost, I don't want to say it was an afterthought, but it was almost treated like this one-man accident, and it was all self-contained, and We were worried about, what was going to happen with the breakup of the Soviet Union. Yeah.
It was in Alaska, where some people can look out of their kitchen window and see the Soviet Union.
That's right.
not the rest of us, but some people can.
The last show. She's still hanging around, like you said, to the end of this year.
Oh, man, I'm telling
really,
you. It's
exhausting.
You know.
I mean, I look at the list. Like, when you think about the teabag movement, the tea partiers, and how confusing, and it's almost like I think of those World Cup, Vesuvia things, the noise, the cacophony they created around the healthcare stuff and around...
Well,
What happens with stuff like that?
Well, my sense is that the Tea Party people, the ones who think Obama's not really the president, he wasn't really born here, and all of that nonsense. Okay, I mean, I'll tell you, it would be a pretty good trick to get a birth announcement in the Honolulu Times in August of 1961, just to fake out everybody in 2008. Okay, that'd be a pretty good trick. That'd be the best sleight of hand that anybody's managed to put up in a long time.
That's
so that alone ought to be enough to satisfy anybody who's not brain dead. But anyway, my sense of it is that this this contingent that we're calling the teabaggers, mm-hmm. is probably doesn't account for more than, oh, I don't know, at the absolute outside, somewhere in the 20 percentile of the population that either is into that or allies themselves with it or believes the same things. I don't think it's a significant enough contingent of people to have any significant effect, really, on our elections, because basically these people are spouting things like they want to end Social Security and they want to shut down the Department of Education and so, I mean, this is complete insanity. And not only that, they want to cut down on Medicare and Medicaid. Well, you know who it is who goes out and does most of the voting. It's all the seniors. Okay, they're the ones who are most likely to be at the polls on election day. Is your over 70 crowd, and as the boomers get to be older and are now in retirement ages, and they are once they got past 62, they are now the leading edge of the seniors. And you can bet that they're not going to be voting to shut down Social Security or any of these things. So my hunch is that this contingent of teabaggers is going to have a very minimal effect for all the noise they've made and for all the attention they've gotten. I think that in the long run, it's going to be nothing more than an asterisk on history, if that. What I'm more concerned about is episodes like this spill, which is really doing a job on the current administration in ways that nobody could have suspected. I mean, yeah, he could have gone down in sort of ignominious defeat over health care or some of these other things. No, that didn't happen. No, he's got to contend with an oil hole in the ocean floor that nobody knows how to plug. I mean, and who's going to get the blame? The guy who's in the White House at the moment is going to get the blame, even though the reason that happened is the last administration removed all the safeguards that might have kept something like this from happening. And these guys, when they came in, didn't reorder any of that. They kind of looked the other way. So this is liable to have more of a, you know, deleterious effect on Obama than any of this other stuff, including the teabaggers.
Somebody should have told him that the 21-year luck was about to run out, and he would have
Well, that you know,
MSS thing, and then broke it up because you had
that's the problem. I'll tell you an interesting little story. A broadcaster friend of mine is in the process of moving, and he sold his co-op in Manhattan, and he had a summer place out on Long Island, and he and his wife were afraid that the Manhattan property wasn't going to sell because of the economy, so they put the Long Island property up as well and asked me for dates to put them out on the market, and I gave them dates, and they both sold. So now... they're without a place. They got a lot of money in the bank, but they've got no place to live. Okay, and they've got a sick dog, and you know the co-ops, the temporary housing that they can find in Manhattan. You know they don't want dogs or whatever it is. Anyway, they thought they had found a place down in the Soho area, and he was about to go, and the property wanted a year in advance. They wanted to be paid a year in advance. And he realized that even if he bought a place and did some upgrading of it, he might need a place to stay in the meanwhile. So it wasn't so terrible. And he went to the bank about a week ago to get the money and had lunch with a former publicity agent person that he had known from 21 years ago. Okay, one of those cycles.
Oh, wow.
They sit down for lunch, and the guy says to him, they're talking about what's going on, and he says he's about to move into this place. And the guy says, no, you don't want to move in there. And he says, well, why not? He says, well, that's right across from the heliport. He says, this helicopter's landing and taking off every hour of the day. You know? And here he's got the checks in his pocket to give to the property to tie him up for a year in a place where the helicopters are going to be taken on. He calls up the movers to tell them, hold off, we're not going to be moving on that day, and we're not going to be moving into that property. And the mover, who he's used a few times before, says, boy, am I glad to hear that, because that's right across the street from the heliport.
Wow.
Now, you know, you could say, well, what a coincidence. Well, not really.
Not really.
Because
how do you get people sensitive to that, though? Most people would look at
Well,
that
you know what it is. You know what it is, Mark. You know what it is. It's the fact that we don't believe in some of this subliminal stuff that's going on, because it's hard to hold it in your hand. It's like mercury. You hold mercury in the palm of your hand, try to hold it still. Okay, it's just all over the place. Or Jell-O, the same idea. Warm Jell-O, especially warm Jell-O. So whereas it's hard to hold in your hand and really eyeball it, it tends to be dismissed, because things like that happen to us, we basically call coincidences. Well, I'll tell you what Dr. Hart says. Coincidence is just a word for a law we haven't figured out yet. Mm-hmm. And he says that what Merlin does, what this time system that we've been playing with for 20 years does, is it acts as a kind of coincidence detector. It tells you where the coincidences are all going to converge, so as they're going to interact with each other, and that point in time is then going to turn out to be a big eventful one, because all the coincidences connected to that set of events is going to converge at that point in time. So what we're really doing, it's like these GPS things. We're finding where these convergence points in the future are going to happen in advance.
Okay.
So we know where they're going to be, and once we know where they're going to be, we can start to look around and say, well, all right, then what the hell is it going to be? What series of things could happen at that point that would all tie together and make that a very eventful pocket of time? So what we're doing effectively is we're finding the coordinates of the time frame first. And then we're looking to see if we can figure out what series of events would have to happen in order to make that convergence point into the eventful thing we're seeing it's liable to be. And I'll tell you, that part of it involves guesswork. Guesswork and being good news junkies. It's a little bit like looking at as I said, if you go and you look at the website, this timetracks.org, it's Time Tracks without the C,
right.
It's TRAKS, not CKS, .org. If you go and you look there, and you look for the one that's listed as the end times. I think it's called End Times.
The 2012 one, yeah.
The 2012 one, yes. Right,
or you go to 2010.
Right, well, if you go to either that or you go to projectmerlin.com and you take a look at the very top of the very first page,
right,
you'll see a small version of the same thing. What you see is this huge mountain range rising up in 2010. You know, it actually starts in 2008, and then it gets more interesting in 2009, and then in 2010 it goes nuts. Okay, and between roughly middle of 2010 and the summer fall of 2011, you get this enormous mountain range, and by the time you actually get to December 2012, which is the end of that graphic, things have pretty much quieted down. I mean, there may be a culmination of stuff at that point, but it certainly won't be a surprise by the time that period of time arrives, because we will have been living through the prelude for the previous couple of years, one of which we're in the middle of.
No, I don't know in front of me, but was there a similar time track for leading up to Y2K?
There really wasn't, because Y2K never happened.
Right, it was just... Well, 2012, that's...
Y2K, well, one of the funny things about Y2K, we actually ran that just to see. And George and I looked at each other and said, this looks like it's going to be a yawn. And, oh, it was a huge big... Oh, my God, well, it could unleash nuclear devices because the clocks are... I mean, the stories got completely crazy about what could happen. And nothing happened at all. I mean, I'm sure that's not entirely true. There were probably a few traffic lights in Turin probably didn't work or something.
Speaking of parallel realities here, just so this come over the wire where we were talking, Tiger's going to pay $750 million in his divorce settlement. And part of the conditions, he's prohibited from bringing single women around the kids in exchange for his wife's silence and $750 million. They have one. They were married about 7 years, though. They were married about 7 years.
Wait a second. Listen to this.
Uh-huh.
If you go, you're online right now?
Yeah.
Go to the timetracks.org website.
Okay.
Okay. If you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see a highlighted thing that says people.
Mm-hmm.
If you click on that, it'll take you to a bunch of time tracks of famous people. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll find Tiger Woods.
Okay.
Click on Tiger Woods and take a look at the end of 2009 and the beginning of 2010.
It's a mess, huh? Let's see. Well, I'll tell you, if you had one on what happened to the Gores last week, their whole family's getting divorced. Everybody's getting divorced. The kids, the grandkids. All right, let's see. Here's,
listen, when I did the forecast, you'll find him. He's down at the bottom. He's all the way down at the bottom. I think he's the last one.
Oh, let me see. They go to the Merlin page. Tony Blair looking at me there. Look, he's kind of out of time himself.
What I was going to say was, in the case of Tiger, you look at this time track that was originally run several years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it started in. I'm going to guess and say it started somewhere in the early middle 90s, and the window of time around 2009 2010 is I think it's close to three quarters of the way through the time track. If you pin this thing to the wall and you stood back about 6 or 8 feet. And all you could see was the grayscale, and not even the years, just the grayscale. Your eye would immediately jump to the end of 2009, beginning of 2010, because the trend line absolutely goes nuts. It just goes nuts. And Woods is maybe one of the least likely people we would have ever thought to be finding himself involved in a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this guy wasn't Mr. Goody Two-Shoes for all of those years, okay, and of course those are the people you really have to watch out for.
Oh, yeah.
Have you gotten to it yet?
No, I'm looking. On the page here, it goes through end times, and you got Gonzalez and Pickens and Chris Matthews and...
I think you're on the first page. What I'm talking about is on the front page of the Time Tracks library.
Right.
Okay. The very front page. There is a when you get past the inauguration and the Obama stuff, all the election
right.
things,
yeah,
you find across. you'll find across the page there's like chapters, and there's one that says Time Twins, and there's one that says Celebrities, I think, and there's one that says
let's see.
I'm going to bring it up myself so that I can see what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it from memory.
Here.
But I've only.
I'm on the Time Tracks page.
All right. Well, let me.
You got to find it for me because I'll be looking.
I'll get you there. Hold on. Hang on a second.
And then we got to figure out where LeBron James is going before we finish tonight.
Well, and Paul Pierce, who says he might not come back to the Celtics.
Yeah, well, he's just throwing his hat in the ring. Everyone else is paying people. Why not him? they're all I'd opt out of my contract, too, if someone was going to pay me. And there you got this Russian guy, and you got the Russian spies. You got the Russian guy buying the Nets. You got people around here in my neighborhood. They don't want to go to the coffee shop because they figure that somebody's going to take them out.
Okay.
A bunch of people. All
right.
Okay.
Yeah, excuse me?
You got it? Where are we here?
If you have the Time Track Library homepage, it says at the top Time Track Library.
Right.
Okay. If you look along right below that, you'll see a series of buttons. Okay.
Yeah.
One says celebrities, another says events, and the third says people. If you click on the one that says people.
Okay.
Okay, and then you scroll down to the very bottom of that page.
There's Tiger. Okay.
You'll come up with Tiger Woods.
Right below Paul Wolfowitz.
That's it.
Another
That's Wolf. Right.
All right, let's see what Tiger...
That's right.
Tiger...
Right under Wolfowitz. Now,
oh,
Tiger starts...
You better know how to swim. He doesn't come out of this till after 2013.
Now, what's amazing about that, though, is that if you look at the rest of the page,
empty.
The rest of the page doesn't even resemble anything like this.
No, I'm telling you, you couldn't have had a more like boring time track. You know, a little surge there in 04. I guess that's around when his dad died. And everything else is a bunch of zeros, nothing. And then he's got what looks like... you know, it's like 7 years of bad luck starting here. It's like it's just a wall of noise.
That's right. That's right. And the thing is, if you looked at that whole page and knew absolutely nothing about this technology, you'd have to say, well, what goes on after 09? Because it's not like the rest of the page.
Right.
Okay. Now, exactly. Now, when we looked at that, we didn't predict that this guy was going to, you know, turn into a hornball and find himself in serious trouble and with a $750,000 divorce hanging out, $750 million divorce hanging over him. Okay, that didn't occur to us, and no, we didn't predict that. But what we did say was that there was going to be some enormous career change for Tiger Woods at that point in time. Now, I would think that this qualifies as a pretty enormous, you know, career change for Tiger Woods.
So I think he'll be worried about a lot more than hitting him straight with that.
That's right. And if you looked at the prediction list for 2010,
mm-hmm.
Woods is on it, and Al Gore's on it,
yeah.
And Pamela Anderson's on it, and Matt Lauer is on it. Who else is on here? The famous people.
You got Phil Mickelson here. Just as a contrast, his time track goes to nothing after this year. Basically, he had a rough couple of years with all the people with the cancer and everything in his life. His life actually calms down right when
it quiets down. I'll tell you what the quieting down means. It means that whatever he's doing and however he's doing, when the music stops.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably what he'll continue to be doing over the period of time where it's quiet. So it doesn't mean nothing's going to happen. It means nothing new is going to happen that's very different from what's been going on. So if what's been going on when the music stops is that he's winning majors with some regularity, then he will probably continue to win majors with some regularity over the period of time that's quiet, because what that quiet means is nothing really new is going to be happening. Now, if what happens when the music stops on Phil's is that he hits a slump and he all of a sudden, I mean, he's within a hair's breadth right now of being named number one on the professional chart of golfers. If he gets to be number one, I would say there's a pretty good chance he'd hold on to that for a while. And that might mean that Woods is going to have a real hard time really coming back from this event. And, you know, one of the things that people said, well, you know, his wife would be a fool to divorce him because, you know, this guy's made of money. Well, I think you can live pretty well on $750 million. Okay, yeah. if that's what the divorce is. And Woods being a fairly sensitive soul, okay, and very needy of his privacy and whatnot, this has got to be devastating for him. The combination of not winning and having trouble with his game and this one, you know, coming on wanting $750 million to divorce him. What we had suggested with that going on was that we might even see something like a suicide attempt on his part over this upcoming period, especially if this divorce actually happens, because he's not the kind of guy that walks away from that very easily, and that's going to affect him for a very, very long time. I mean, he didn't even start dating anybody seriously until shortly before he married this woman. You know, if he wanted the kind of fooling around he's been doing lately, he would have been smart to have done that earlier along, but what he was doing earlier along was perfecting his golf game. Okay, now he's got a real problem on his hands because he started doing that. It's very hard to stop doing that once you've been doing it, running around and picking up people. The people he's been picking up, you have to wonder, and then for somebody who wanted their privacy, you know, you scratch your head when you find out that he's been giving out his home cell phone number and saying things like, don't call me at home because my wife's liable to pick it up. Well, what kind of a fool does that who's concerned about their privacy? I mean, and besides, the kind of women he was picking up were basically moochers. These are people who are looking to gold dig. I'm not sure there was a really sincere one in the whole bunch. Okay, so his ability to pick people to fool around with was not very good. And on top of that, he was maintaining relationships with these people. These aren't the kind of people you maintain relationships with. These are like one-nighters or something. You don't maintain long-term relationships with those people. But he did. And gave out his home phone number in the process. Or the other thing that's odd about it, if somebody who has a giant yacht that's called privacy lives in a gated community 75 feet away from their neighbors. I mean, it's not like he didn't have enough money to go find himself an estate somewhere where he had, you know, armed guards and moats around and nobody within 5 miles in any direction. He was 75 feet away from his neighbors.
He has, as they say, issues, which a lot of celebrities have seen.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, over the last 6 months, I think you could make a parade of people with similar issues.
Oh, my God.
His ex-husband is an example. There's been a lot of them. But I guess as we turn the corner here and get the mop out of the ocean and out of Tiger Woods' life, looking ahead to the second half of this year, we got the midterm elections. We got whatever happens with health care. I did address LeBron before. It'd be nice if you sent him to the Knicks here on the Merlin. But I guess what is the big sort of? I mean, I know you have a lot of predictions for the year up there that I was looking at just now. A lot of them have already played out. What's the big thing that you see happening in the second half of the year that's that's sort of over the horizon where people can't be anticipating it right now, where we could say it now and go, aha, you know, in 5 or 6 months, because it just seems like...
Well, you know, those are always the tough ones to pull the rabbits out of the hats. As I said to you, I'm not convinced that we're out of the woods.
Literally.
So to speak.
Tigers and others, yeah.
of some kind of shift in the presidency in terms of the triumvirate sort of here that's running things. One of the people who are closest to the presidency in terms of hierarchies just died. The senator from Virginia,
Burt.
He was maybe fourth in line for the presidency, I think.
That's great.
So there's already been a change in that lineage to the presidency. And you can say, well, he's 92, he's going to go somewhere along in here. Well, yeah, but this turned out to be the year, and right at the midpoint where we expected there to be those changes, Joe Biden, had a few serious aneurysms back not all that long ago, I think probably about 20 years ago, a little bit more than that, 88 or 89, he had them. And they were very serious at the time. They weren't sure whether he was going to survive initially. There hasn't been another incident of that I know of, but it's not unlikely. Obama, who has maybe the largest Secret Service contingent of any president in history, as Jack Kennedy said, if anybody wants to put their own life in jeopardy, they can get to anybody. It's still not out of the question that there might be an episode of that sort on the drawing board around the corner. Although my sense of it is that it would be more likely if he were doing really, 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 really well without any of this, you know, oil spill and all this other stuff going on. That sort of undermined the administration at this point. He looks a lot less impenetrable now than he did, say, 6 or 8 months ago, mm-hmm. when they were savoring the healthcare successes and so on and some of these other things. I think that the tenor of this teabag, contingent has maybe tempered some over the last month or two or three. There seems to be less vociferous stuff going on. You know, no bombings of Democratic congressional headquarters or any of those kinds of things. So, no, what were you going to say?
I'll say check back in October and November when we get closer to the elections. And
well, right. See, what I'm saying is the characteristics for the change are still all there.
Yeah.
Right now, it looks like the fallout from what's gone on with this spill and the poor way in which it's been handled, and I think it's been handled badly all around. I think if Obama had called out the National Guard and put them on the shore and made a regular visit down there every other week or something so that it really looked like he was doing something, even if he really wasn't, the presidential approval ratings wouldn't have dropped quite as much as they did. But the fact that he looks unable to do anything, and frankly, I think that's probably exactly correct. I think they haven't got a clue as to what to do about this, because if the oil people,
they were as handcuffed as that as they were with the year before when they did the stimulus package, and if you're in bed with Wall Street and you're in bed with Big Pharma and you're in bed with Big Oil, and they're all partners with you, and you've got them in all these, you know, agencies.
Well, there's also something else to consider. He basically predicted loudly that there would not be a double dip to this recession.
Right.
I think there was probably a very good chance that that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for what's going on in Europe right now. Between the Greek situation and the austerity program that's been put in place in Great Britain,
right.
Who's going to be out there to buy American products?
And we don't
produce anywhere near as much as we used to in terms of actual manufactured goods, but the manufactured goods we do produce, we're not going to have the buyers for in Europe that we used to have. And the Chinese economy is dragging, so they're not going to be buying as much from us as they might have earlier. And that's going to have a significant effect on the gross national product of the next 6 months. And not only that, but the housing sales over the last 30 days was down something like 30%. And nearly all of those, something like, I believe it was in the 80 percentile or thereabouts, were foreclosures. Normally, foreclosures only account for about 2 to 5% of housing sales, maximum. We were up in the 70 or 80 percentile, and they were of home sales, and those were all foreclosures. So, you know, the fact that the economy was just beginning to start when this financial crisis hit in Europe, and if you notice what the market did last week and earlier this week in terms of reacting to essentially the economic situation in Europe, that doesn't augur well for the remainder of the year. And I understand that we have employment numbers and others coming out, I think, Friday. You know, if we slip back up above the 10 percentile, which is not unlikely, we're going to find ourselves with that second dip in the recession that my colleague Dr. Hart was convinced was going to happen and that he was talking about at the beginning of the year. So you're talking about one of the things that could go on, therein is something that we might have to concern ourselves with. And he also suggested something that I thought was unlikely, and that was, he suggested that there would be a tug of war in here, mm-hmm, between the presidency and the military. Now, we've always had an understanding that our military was run by civilians, okay, and they took their marching orders from civilians. They didn't stand up and talk back and tell them where they could get off. Until lately, this episode with the four star that was running the McChrystal, Stanley McChrystal, running the war in Afghanistan. There hasn't been anything like that all the way back to MacArthur in the 50s.
Yeah, I guess if you sum it all up, and we got to wrap up the show here in a minute. If you take all of these things that are working against Obama, just trying to, he's supposed to be the guy bringing change. Well, more change has come at him than he's been able to send back out. If there was a change in and a change out going on, he's getting pelted with all these changes from outside. And you're saying out of all of them, the one that is right now causing him the most consternation, so to speak, is the BP spill. When you've got, you decided the military conflict, we have the border conflict with Arizona, we have the healthcare stuff, we have the economy, we have two wars that we're still in, we have a healthcare thing that spills over into cap and trade. all these other things.
Yeah,
going
there's
on.
There's a whole. You're right about that. There's a whole series of changes, and a lot of them are out of his control.
Yeah, it just seems like if he was going to look at this through the lens of wisdom, he would have said thank you, but no thank you when we nominated.
Well,
anybody could have done much difference with
that. That's
it.
Right. That's almost exactly right. And the interesting thing about it is that if this guy had come in without all of this baggage, imagine what could have happened.
Right. So I guess what we'll do, we'll park it here, and we'll say, well, hopefully LeBron will come to the Knicks. So there's you guys tuning in, at midnight Eastern time, where the signing, the party begins. So we'll have Paul back on to reflect on that and other things. We'll get you back on, you know, middle of November, around there when the dust is settled on the midterms, and see what's standing, see if the economy's tanked again, see if Obama's slipped a lot more than
I'll tell you, it might be more fun to do this at the end of September, even.
Oh, maybe, okay, yeah. Well, sure,
right
before we get started on it. That's great. That's a great time to do it. You're right. All right, well, thanks a lot for joining us. And again, you can go.
You're welcome. Have a good summer, Mark.
Yeah, have a good summer, dude. Watch your back up there.
I will.
Put you back on the beginning of the fall there, and see where we stand. So hopefully some of your predictions hopefully won't come true, so we don't have to go through.
Yeah, really.
Stuff, but be wrong once in a while.
That's right.
Take it easy.
Goodbye.
Happy 4th of July. Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, so there he goes. Paul Garcia. You can check it out, the Merlin Project, at timetracks.org with a no C, or you can go check out timetracks.org on the Merlin Project. Just Google it already. You guys, and it's in the paraphernalia there for the site. So there you go. What is this now? I think I'm off the air. I got to call back in. Just waiting for host to call in.